Livewire with Jeff Dorset.
So I'm standing to attention for Midge Ure, OBE. How are you, Midge? What a great honour that was to get for you.
Well, yeah, but it's awkward because I'm curtsying to you.
Yeah. But super,
no,
wasn't it?
Fantastic. It was wonderful. Yeah, a lovely moment. It was great for my, you know, my parents saw it, which was lovely to them. That's really important, you know.
Sure.
But maybe not as important as when they did This Is Your Life, because they really understood that. You know, that was something that was right on their radar. But
sure.
Yeah, lovely thinker.
Sure. Now, what about right in the beginning, before we talk about the tour and everything else that's going on, the catalogue tour, is what about your early inspirations, Midge? You know, what inspired you to get in the music industry? I mean, I'm guessing sort of the 60s groups or whatever it may be, but I may be totally wrong. What were your early inspirations that inspired you to think, that's why I want to be in the music industry?
Well, I think music was always, the radio was king, you know, back then. You know, I was born in the 50s, so there wasn't much music on television besides, you know, middle of the road, you know, kind of variety shows and stuff, and the very few channels that we had. But radio constantly pumped out, you know, a wide spectrum of music, you know, from Frank Sinatra right through to the Beatles and stuff. So it was always there. But I remember seeing it was a Tommy Steele movie, and it was, I don't know, he wore a white suit and he had a guitar. And I thought, all the girls loved him. And I thought, that's fantastic. You know, what a great thing that is, that guitar.
Yes.
So the idea of you know, having one of these things one day. I could draw a guitar long before I was ever allowed to have one. So the obsession was already there, you know, already there. And I couldn't really shake it off. I could always sing, so that was free. You know, the voice was always there. But the instrument was the sexy beast. That was the thing that I really wanted to get hold of.
Yeah. And, of course, right the way through, I mean, such a varied career, Midge, you know, from the days of Slick all the way through, you know, Rich Kids and Visage. I was going to mention Rusty Egan, but if I mention Rusty, we'd probably spend 5 hours because I did him for an interview and the most talkative guy I think I've ever had on the show. But what a bundle of energy.
Oh, poor you. I know. In the Rich Kids, we used to take turns to share a room, to share a hotel room with him, because he'd stay up all night telling you about his latest, you know, fashion accessories and his latest, you know, bargains that he'd buy in a junk shop or whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, I know Rusty can talk. But yes, no, but Rusty and I, listen, when he talks, you have to listen very carefully, because every so often a fantastic nugget comes out, like when he suggested we get all our favourite musicians together and form Visage. So that was one that I'm glad I listened to.
Yes. And talking about listening to people, so here you are one day on the tube, November 1984, and Paula hands you a phone, and at the end of it is Bob. I'd love to know what Bob said to you there, apart from the rant about Michael Burke and the Ethiopian famine, which led on to Band-Aid. But I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall listening to that phone call.
Well, it was a bolt out of the blue, because obviously I was in a dressing room up in Newcastle somewhere, about to do The Tube, which is a live music show on a Friday night that Paula co-hosted. So she hands me the phone and I'm just expecting to have a chat with Bob. And that's when he started to tell me about what you'd just seen and how disgusting it was and how he wanted to do something, but the Boomtown Rats were kind of finished. He wasn't sure that, you know, he'd be able to, you know, gather momentum on this. And he just said, look, can we meet up when you get back? And that's precisely what we did. So two songwriters sat down together and spent 2 hours trying to figure out what we could possibly do without actually suggesting that we write a song.
Yeah. Now, that was an iconic moment, but how about this one? Everybody remembers who sang the first line on Band-Aid. Now, as I understand it, is it true that it was originally scheduled to be David Bowie, but then it switched to Paul Young?
No, I think that was a kind of poodle in the microwave story. I think it's that was convenient that someone came up with that.
Oh.
Nobody was earmarked to sing any particular line. In fact, when I turned up at the studio that morning, because I'd spent 4 or 5 days playing all the instruments and the backing track, and I sang the song as a demo, because bear in mind, all those artists turned up cold. They'd never heard the song. It's not like today where you can just send it to them an email or whatever. you know, they turned up cold to hear this thing, so they had to have someone singing it to them. And I realized that not only did I know who was going to sing which lines, but I realized we hadn't written enough lines for everyone to sing an entire line. So I got a few people to go up and do it. The main reason Paul did, I think Tony Hadley was the first person to step up and say, I'll sing first, because it's like 9 o'clock on a Sunday morning and they're all croaky and hungover.
Sure.
So he was the first person to stand up and sing. But when Paul sang the opening line, and I think some of the others may have sung the opening line as well, it just had this, it just pulled you in, this wonderful voice that Paul has. It was just, you know, it just got you. So it was never earmarked for anyone. So I'm not sure who came up with the David Bowie story. Probably yeah. David Bowie.
Yeah. Now, we mentioned the, yeah, probably. Now, we mentioned about Bob being a great salesman, but so's Harvey Goldsmith. I mean, as I hear the story about how he got certain people to play at Live Aid, now, I don't know how true it is, but somebody mentioned about him talking to Bono and saying to Bono, you've got to be there because X, Y, or Z is going to be there. But he hadn't even approached X, Y, or Z. And when he gets Bono on board, he then goes to X, Y, and Z and says, you know, well, Bono's going to do it, so you've got to do it. So that's a salesman for you.
It's a brilliant salesman. It's also a liar. But in the best possible way. You
oh,
know?
Nice.
Yeah, he did that. He did. He told everyone was doing it. Everyone was committed. And his theory was, well, now it's public. They can't really turn in and say no.
Yes.
You know, so yeah, he was an immense, you know, machine to conjure up all those people, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, talking about Live Aid just for a moment, a very good friend of mine is Steve Blacknell. Now, Steve Blacknell, I don't know if you remember, but Steve Blacknell founded the Waffle Club, but he also was on the aeroplane, the Concorde, that went from London to Philadelphia interviewing Phil Collins on the plane.
Wow, I'd forgotten all about it. I remember Phil doing both sides, and you know, it was just showing off, I think.
Yeah.
But I'd completely forgot that Steve had done that.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, and he dines on that one really well. But
I'm sure he dined on the plane incredibly well. That's a real blag to get on Concorde to fly across the Atlantic.
He's a great guy, and he's founded the Waffle Club, which does exactly what it says on the tin. Loads of people go there once a month and have a great chat about the music industry. Now, I must ask you, Royal Albert Hall last October for your birthday. I went there a couple of years ago to see 87-year-old Frankie Valli. One of the best wow. gigs I've ever seen, Midge. He looked the part. He was grandstanding. He was clapping. He was doing it all. Looked great in a boss suit. Of course, other suits are available, but he looked the part, and he didn't miss a note, and it was fantastic. He did it with the Royal Philharmonic, and everything was great. But you were there on the Royal Albert Hall last October, celebrating your birthday as well.
I was, but I couldn't think of a better way of celebrating it. You know, it was my 70th, and I just thought, well, you know, the opportunities don't come round very often, and I wanted to celebrate it with the people who've been with me, you know, all these years, all this time, and it was amazing. People flew in from all over the world to be there, and it was really, you know, really touching. It was really heartfelt. So yeah, it was lovely. In fact, that's what kind of inspired me to come out and do this tour now. So it was a much needed injection for me to get re-enthused about going out and doing live stuff, especially after the last couple of years when tours have been cancelled at the last yeah. minute because of you know, COVID,
sure.
and, you know, restrictions and all of that. We've been through such a miserable time, all of us, and certainly the music industry has. So to reinvigorate myself and go back out and do it again is just perfect. It's great.
Terrific. Midge, it's always a great pleasure. I was thinking about all the various tracks that we could play. I'd like to play Reap the Wild Wind, which is always highly requested on one of the shows that I do. And if that's okay with you, that's the one we're going to finish with.
Absolutely. It's always good to hear something that doesn't get that much airplay.
Super. Midge, you're standing in line a sec, but thanks very much for your time. Reap the Wild Wind. Check him out on his Catalogue Hits Tour. Thank you.
You Livewire is produced by Steve Osborne Media. Steve Osborne Media.